It is Tuesday, January 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Iran's oil production surges as international sanctions are eased against Tehran.
Iran is going to be more flexible and more open in its dealings with the outside world.
China's 2015 economic growth finishes at its weakest point since 1990. We look at country music's most anticipated releases for 2016, and Glenn Frey, one of the founders of the rock group The Eagles, dies at the age of 67. It's all ahead. On Monday, Iran announced a major boost in oil production by 500,000 barrels a day. It follows the lifting of international sanctions over its nuclear program. Iran currently produces about 3 million barrels per day, of which about 1 million is exported. Saturday's announcement that Iran is complying with last July's nuclear agreement is seen by many analysts as a boost to the prestige of President Hassan Rouhani, who said he expects it will open new windows for engagement with the world. It also precedes parliamentary elections in Iran next month and presidential elections next year. Amin Sakal, regional analyst at the Australian National University and author of the just published book, Iran at the Crossroads, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, Mr. Rouhani is keen to kickstart the economy and improve relations with the outside world.
Iranians are very much interested in overhauling their economy, they're overhauling their industry, and of course they may also be in need of the services, and they would like to acquire high technology and attract foreign investment. For that reason, Iran is going to be more flexible and more open in its dealings with the outside world, and at the same time they would like to increase their oil production. Iran has the capacity to produce up to 6 million barrels a day. They would like to really export more oil because that's their main source of revenue, not only compensate for the plummeting oil prices, but also to fund some of the important economic and social reforms that President Rouhani has promised to the Iranian people.
Obviously, there's a lot of pent-up demand after years of sanctions in Iran.
The Iranian side is right in saying that the lifting of the sanctions could be an enormous boost to the country's economic development, and I think that's what they're really aiming at. I think there are going to be really two priorities for the Rouhani government. One is to fix the economy and bring about some important social reforms which have been long overdue, and the other is to, of course, fund this Iranian military operations in Syria. And I think that is going to be quite costly for Iran.
Mr. Rouhani, in his remarks Sunday, said the lifting of sanctions opens new windows for engagement with the world. But is there a limit to change that could come in Iran?
President Rouhani is going to be very conscious of the hardline factions which have been vehemently opposed to his nuclear deal with the world powers. Therefore, I don't think he's going to really move as fast as some Iranians may expect him to do, or for that matter, the outside world would expect him to do. But at the same time, he remains committed to fulfilling this promise of reforms, particularly economic reforms, as quickly as he can. Of course, one could not really expect that this is going to happen overnight, and it may take a year or two before the benefits are seen by the Iranian people. But at the same time, he has called on the Iranian people to be patient.
That is Amin Sakal. He's a regional analyst at the Australian National University. On Sunday, the U.S. announced new sanctions on several Iranian nationals and companies for their part in developing Iran's ballistic missile program. Two Iranian missile tests last year are said to have violated U.N. Security Council resolutions. Tehran denounced the new sanctions as illegitimate. Well, with a look at what's being reported online about this story is my colleague, Susan Yaki.
Hi, Sarah, everyone. VOAnews.com reports Iranian Defense Minister Hossein Dakhan said new U.S. sanctions targeting the country's ballistic missile program will have no effect on missile development. Dakhan said the ballistic missile sanctions show the U.S. is hostile toward Iran, and he pledged to unveil new missile development soon. President Barack Obama said his government will vigorously enforce sanctions against Iran's ballistic missile program. He said, quote, Iran's recent missile test, for example, was a violation of its international obligations. And as a result, the United States is imposing sanctions on individuals and companies working to advance Iran's ballistic missile program. And we are going to remain vigilant about it. The Irish Times reports the French foreign minister said the European Union will consider this week whether to follow Washington's lead and impose sanctions on Iran as a response to the country's ballistic missile testing activity. Speaking during a visit to Abu Dhabi, Laurent Fabius said the EU would consider the matter this week. He said, we have to compare the American system and European system to see if there are new sanctions to take or not. This exercise will be implemented this week. The Globe and Mail reports Iran is ready to battle its rivals both within and outside OPEC for a larger share of the oversupplied global oil market as sanctions against it are lifted and the prospect of its added production keeps downward pressure on already depressed prices. It says in a statement on the Iranian Oil Ministry website, Rodnodin Javadi, deputy oil minister, said Tehran is determined to retake the country's share of export markets, which collapsed after the international sanctions were imposed in 2012. Sarah?
Thank you, Susan. That's International Edition Susan Yockey. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Do you sleep poorly during the work week, but try to make up for it by sleeping in on weekends? A new study from researchers at the University of Chicago finds that having two consecutive nights of sleep, as many do on weekends, has been shown to offset an increased risk of diabetes, which has been associated with a lack of sleep during the work week. Scientists say that getting less sleep, such as 4 or 5 hours a night, even temporarily, can increase the odds of developing diabetes by about 16%, which is about the same increased risk factor for those who are obese. While their work focused on sleep and an increased risk of diabetes, the researchers say further study needs to be conducted regarding other negative health effects of sleep deprivation, such as high blood pressure and various cognitive difficulties. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we look at potential new country music hits for 2016. Stocks in Shanghai and Shenzhen soared more than 3% Tuesday following news that the Chinese economy in 2015 grew at its slowest pace in 25 years. Hong Kong and Tokyo also gained. The government said the economy expanded 6.9%, down from the 7.3% advance in 2014, and slightly under the official target rate of 7.0%, leading investors to conclude that Beijing will employ further stimulus measures. The government has cut a key interest rate 6 times since November 2014. Recent volatile Chinese stock and currency fluctuations have made many investors nervous about the rate of deterioration in the economy. December's industrial output and retail sales failed to meet analyst expectations. Shane Oliver, chief economist at the Sydney-based AMP Capital, tells International Edition's Victor Beattie that even though China's growth rate is down from the annual double-digit growth rates of the previous decade, it still remains a key driver of global growth.
Everyone focuses on Chinese industrial activity because that's what we're used to coming out of China, factory production, exports. Whereas the reality is that China is transitioning from that, i.e. production, manufacturing production, towards services and consumer spending, much like in the US economy or Australian economy, where the focus is these days on those industries. And I think that's what's happening now in China. And so retail sales at over 11%, 11.1% is a pretty good number. It tells us that many of the measures to cut interest rates, the stimulus to help fuel car sales, all those things seem to be helping.
China's crude steel output fell 2.3% to 803.8 million tons in 2015. Apparently, that's the lowest level in some 30 years.
Yeah, there's a lot of weakness coming through in steel production. I think that the problem is that the world, not just China, the world is awash in steel production. That's why the Chinese are having to cut back. But it also contrasts with news from the big miners that they're still growing their production. The Rios and the BHPs of the world are growing their production of iron ore by around 6 to 7% a year. Down on recent years, but still growing. So you've got this problem that you've got diminishing demand growth for iron ore flowing from weakness in steel, and yet continuing increases in supply from the big miners, all of which, of course, means that the small miners, the small producers, are getting squeezed quite badly.
Shane, also, China's electric power generation fell for the first time in nearly 50 years last year. What does this tell us?
The slowdown in electricity production and consumption, that's a function of the slowdown in manufacturing. So some would say it's another guide to how the economy is performing, and it tells us that, yes, it's well and truly slowed down. But it really flows from that slowdown. And if you slow down your growth in industrial production, then that has an impact on electricity consumption. I think that's what we're seeing here.
Do you expect any stimulus measures?
I think the reality is that China probably does need more stimulus measures. Its economy has slowed, much like the US and Europe and Japan went through tougher times a few years ago, and you could argue they're still going through somewhat tougher times than used to be the case. But with Chinese growth having slowed, I think the reality is that Chinese interest rates are still too high, particularly for small and medium-sized businesses, many of which have to borrow at high single-digit or, in some cases, double-digit interest rates.
That's Shane Oliver of AMP Capital. He says he expects further slowing in the economy this year to be around 6.5%, but discounts the likelihood of a hard landing, pointing to the property market where prices, he says, are picking up and efforts to reduce government debt. He says Chinese policymakers are single-minded in their determination to keep China from falling into recession, knowing that could spark social unrest. Taiwan's premier has left his post following elections that will bring the chief opposition party into power. That party may put ever-tense relations with China on hold. But the current president and the incoming one are negotiating a deal that could stop a mass resignation of the cabinet. Ralph Jennings reports from Taipei.
Taiwan Premier Mao Zedong has taken leave from his job, saying he will not be back. He expressed worry Saturday about his ability to govern after voters elected a president and parliament from the opposition party. The opposition leaders are expected to take a tougher stance on ties with political rival China, and a hobbled cabinet now may be unable to sustain the trust it has built up with Beijing since 2008. The premier also asked his cabinet to quit, and President Ma Ying-jeou is considering whether to give approval. Mao defended his government's work on China relations and economic growth in a speech to the cabinet Monday, but acknowledged divergent public opinion. He says a new public opinion has been formed. In order to respect the new public opinion and safeguard the promotion of future government work, Mao says he has approached the president to request approval of his resignation. On Saturday, opposition Democratic Progressive Party chairperson Tsai Ing-wen won the presidential election with 56% of the vote. That day, the premier issued a statement saying that without his resignation, major decisions would be impossible, severely affecting development and people's happiness. Analysts believe her victory reflects popular discontent with the current government of 8 years. Voters said this month the president has moved too fast in forming economic ties with China, an old rival that claims sovereignty over the self-rule island. Many in the electorate also believe the Ma administration could have done more to create jobs, raise wages, and control housing prices. But President Ma is holding off on approving the cabinet resignation. He is talking with the president-elect's camp about finding government ministers who are agreeable to both sides and could keep their jobs past Tsai's inauguration in May. Ma can legally retain his current cabinet, but Taiwanese presidents typically change them to apologize for election losses. The premier's temporary replacement says talks with China on a free trade deal would stop if the cabinet resigns. It is unclear how Tsai's government will negotiate with China. She disputes Beijing's precondition that both sides can talk only as parts of a single China. The current Taiwan government has accepted that condition since Ma took office in 2008. However, the president-elect said throughout her campaign she would avoid upsetting China and not try to break away legally to back up the island's de facto autonomy. Ralph Jennings for VOA News, Taipei.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Well, with the new year comes new music. There was a lot of great country music in 2015, but what's in store for this year? I speak with Nikki Strong of VOA Music about some of the most anticipated country songs of 2016. So, Nikki, I already know we can expect a new album from the iconic Loretta Lynn. It'll be her first one in 10 years. It's called Full Circle and hits stores around March 4th. What other country legends are releasing new music?
Well, Sarah, I just found out Willie Nelson, last year's recipient of the Library of Congress's Gershwin Prize for Popular Song, will salute the brothers George and Ira with the new album. It's called Summertime. Willie Nelson sings George Gershwin. It's due out February 26th. It won't be a traditional country album, but it should be good, as Willie puts his own touch on Gershwin standards, like It Ain't Necessarily So, and they can't take that away from me. Vince Gill is another icon whose new CD, Down to My Last Bad Habit, drops February 12th. I love that title. Vince consistently produces great quality music, and we expect no different this year. The current single, Take Me Down, featuring Little Big Town, has a sultry country rock feel. He also has a new song with newcomer Cam on it, so I'm really looking forward to checking that out. And another artist coming back from a long break like Loretta Lynn is Wynonna Judd. The self-titled CD Wynonna and the Big Noise will hit February 12th. This will be Wynonna's first full-length studio album of original material since 2003.
Wow. What other country albums by women have fans abuzz?
Well, tons, actually. A couple of them, Brandi Clark. Now, she's a brutally honest songwriter whose single Girl Next Door is a great song that basically says, hey, you want the girl next door? Go next door. You want that girl? Go get her. Bye. So she really has guts and grit, and her CD is scheduled to drop in the spring. Lucinda Williams is another bold, gritty, passionate storyteller. Her CD, Ghost of Highway 20, drops February 5th. And another woman artist I am looking forward to is Aubrey Sellers' debut CD. She's the daughter of Leanne Womack and prolific songwriter Jason Sellers. But she says she has her own sound that she describes as garage country, bluegrass, and blues songs presented in a new, edgier way.
Well, let's get into the guys. What do they have in store for us?
Okay, they have lots as well. I'm looking forward to Brothers Osborne, Pawn Shop. They're very funky and gritty, and they borrow from a lot of influences, including classic rock and modern country, and they do really good stuff. Charles Kelly of the group Lady Antebellum drops his solo project while the group is on hiatus, and I have loved what I have heard from him thus far. The single Lucky Girl was written with one of the gods in country music right now, Chris Stapleton, along with Chris Fraser. And the title track, The Driver, is really nice, too. And it's done with Dierks Bentley and Eric Pasley. And that album is due out February the 5th. Dierks Bentley, by the way, will be dropping a new album, too, called Black, which he says will be deeply personal. It's already available on pre-order, but no release date as of yet. And speaking of deeply personal, Blake Shelton will drop his album, and we all expect it to be about his relationship and public divorce from Miranda Lambert. Now, he says this album's going to be very personal, and I can already hear gossip sites right now just dissecting every single lyric. So,
well, thank you, Nikki, for this country music preview. You can find a more extensive list of the most anticipated country albums set to drop in 2016 on VOA Music's Facebook page or via Twitter at @VOA_music. You can also catch Nikki every week on Country Hits USA on VOA 1.
I'm gonna take you for a date, take you for passenger side. I'm gonna put the radio on your favorite song. I'm gonna crank it on up and get you singing along. Hey, hey.
That is Blake Shelton. Well, in other music news, Glenn Frey, a founding member and guitarist for the Eagles, an extremely popular California-based rock band formed in 1971. He's died at the age of 67. The band said in a statement Glenn fought a courageous battle for the past several weeks, but sadly succumbed to complications from rheumatoid arthritis, acute ulcerative colitis, and pneumonia. Besides the many hit songs Frey had with the Eagles, he also achieved some success as a solo artist in the 1980s after the Eagles broke up. But when they reunited at their first live performance in April of 1994, Frey stated, "For the record, we never broke up. We just took a 14-year vacation." The Eagles were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998. Here's one of their earliest hits, Take It Easy, released in 1972. Frey wrote the song and sings the lead.
The sound of your own wheels drive you crazy. Lighten up while you still can. Don't even try to understand. Just find a place to make your stand. Take it easy.
Music of the Eagles. And that's our show. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up, I'm climbing in. So take it easy.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Trafficking in persons or modern slavery is a global multi-billion dollar criminal enterprise. It destabilizes governments and feeds the corruption that compromises the ability of nations to prosper. It fuels other criminal activities such as trafficking or illicit drugs and gun smuggling. It is one of the means by which terrorists fund their activities. Today, it is estimated that there are more than 20 million victims of trafficking globally. No country in the world is immune from this blight on humanity. The United States is one of the top destination countries for human trafficking, as well as for goods produced using forced labor. This means that if we are to fight this scourge, we must begin at home. 3 years ago, President Barack Obama took a number of steps to strengthen and unify the U.S. government response to modern slavery, beginning with a focus on four priority areas: rule of law, that is, investigation, arrest, and prosecution of traffickers; victim assistance, such as health and trauma services, child welfare, ensuring that no forced labor was used anywhere along the supply chain in the production and delivery of goods and services purchased by the United States government; and public awareness and outreach, making the public aware of the scope and extent of the problem, and training people within the government and the public at large how to identify victims of trafficking. Part of this awareness campaign is the President's annual proclamation of January as National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. Our intelligence teams have devoted more resources to identifying trafficking networks, law enforcement officers have been working to dismantle those networks, and prosecutors have striven to punish traffickers, said President Obama in this year's proclamation. We have also enhanced our domestic protection so foreign-born workers better understand their rights. To address the underlying conditions that enable human trafficking in the first place, the United States is promoting development and economic growth across the globe, said President Obama. As we work to end human trafficking here in the United States, we will continue to lead the effort to root it out around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.